Hi, it's Mina. On this episode, Stephen Ruiz of USA Today and I react to Wildcard Weekend and look ahead to the divisional round. If you enjoy listening to this podcast, please take a minute to subscribe to it, rate it, please, 5 stars, and leave a review. Remember, my mom reads all the reviews. Before we get to today's episode, I also want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast. That's What She Said with Sarah Spain. This week, Sarah talks with healing arts trainer Lizzie Cutler about ways to manifest a better version of you in 2020. You can find That's What She Said wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one host is often in beast mode. And it's not Lenny. It's me when I'm hungry. I am super pumped for this week because the divisional round is usually the best round of the playoffs. That's an opinion I think a lot of people share. However, Stephen Ruiz, wildcard weekend was incredible. I mean, that has to be the best wildcard weekend in recent NFL history.
I mean, we have to give all the credit to Josh Allen. He just got it just kicked off with like the best performance. It's everything we wanted out of a Josh Allen performance. I'm still like recovering from it mentally.
I want to rewatch that game in perpetuity. It really like Stephon Boyce had everything, right? I mean, the highs, the lows, the drama. It had one of the craziest plays from Deshaun Watson I've ever seen. Josh Allen too. He had some high highs early. Who could forget the lateral, the fullback. I mean, it just, incredible game. I just loved it so much. And I feel like it's going to age really well.
And then the Seahawks-Eagles game kind of put a damper on the rest of the weekend, I feel like. I mean, it was kind of a bummer.
Total bummer. But also a highly predictable bummer. I think I might have said on this podcast, I certainly said to anyone who listened, this game's going to be insanely ugly. And it was somehow uglier than I thought. So last week, we kind of talked about the wildcard games and rank them by which ones we were most excited for. So tell me, 1 through 4, 1 being the most excited, how would you rank the divisional games?
I'm going to put Lamar versus the Titans first, just because I like the Titans defense. It's like really fun, and I love watching Lamar. And so that's just like a personal one. It's probably a bad pick.
Okay.
And then
I don't think it's going to be close, but we'll talk about that later.
And then 2, I'm going to go Packers, Seahawks, just for Twitter. Just Twitter alone. And just for Ben Baldwin's tweets alone. I'll go the Chiefs game and then Vikings, 49ers. Even though I think from like a football perspective, that's probably the most exciting game. But
yeah, I agree.
Like memes and everything, the other games kind of excite me more.
Well, thank you for ranking them based on your personal preferences and meme ability as opposed to the actual football. We're off to a great start. I think all of these games have the potential to be closer than you might think, but I would be surprised if a few. I guess probably the closest one is Packers-Seahawks, I think, right, in terms of the two teams and how they stack up against. That's just my opinion.
And the Seahawks are involved, so it's a one-possession game.
I mean, this is the thing about Seahawks. Well, I promise we're not going to talk about them at the top. They could play literally any team. They could play a high school team in like Kentucky and it would be a 3-point game, or they could play a Pro Bowl roster and it would be a 3-point game. Like, there's just no reason I think why they will ever not play a close game ever again. I say that and they're probably going to get blown out or blow them out or something. So, but anyways, I want to talk about Texans Chiefs first, if that's okay with you. Because I think the Chiefs are going to win. I'll start off, but I don't think it's impossible for the Texans to pull off an upset, largely because the Texans are the weirdest team in the NFL. Agree or disagree?
Oh, totally agree. Like, they're the most like bipolar team. Like, you never know what you're going to get. They've beaten the Chiefs in Arrowhead. Like, you can't count them out this week, no matter what.
So I want to focus mostly on the Texans offense versus the Chiefs defense, which would be their only chance, I think, of winning this is if it's a shootout. That's, again, my take. But I also think it's a really interesting matchup. And I'll start on the Chiefs side, Stephen, because I know you wrote a really good piece about the Chiefs pass defense and the ways in which they've improved. You wrote that piece before, I believe, they lost Juan Thornhill, the rookie safety, which I think is a massive loss for this team. But I'd love to hear what you think.
Yeah, like I kind of don't know what to expect from the defense because we still haven't seen them play without Thornhill. I think he got injured in week 17, and he was such a big part of what they were doing. And like the big thing that they're doing, if I can summarize it, it's basically like doubling the slot receivers. Like they're protecting the seams at all costs, and they're not letting you beat them with the receiver you want to beat them with. Like we saw that in the AFC title game last year. Whenever the Patriots wanted a pass to Gronk, they just isolate him on one side, and the Chiefs would basically be like, oh, we're just going to put Eric Berry out there, and you can just have a one-on-one matchup. That's not happening with this Chiefs defense, and I think that helps against a team that has DeAndre Hopkins and maybe Will Fuller. We don't know if he's going to play. You never know if Will Fuller is going to play and finish
True.
The game.
I think he is, but yes, that is fair.
So I'm really excited to see how Bill O'Brien counters it, mostly because I have no faith in him figuring this out, just because I feel like their offense is just so basic.
The Texas offense, yeah. The Fuller thing is really interesting, Stephen, because again, assuming he does play, which again, you never know with Will Fuller, and we've all at this point seen the splits with him and without him, and they are bonkers. I don't know if there's a single player in the NFL where the splits like don't reflect public perception of the player to that degree. I mean, people think Will Fuller's good, but I don't think anyone thinks of him as like one of the best receivers in the NFL, right? But his splits look like that, or the Texans splits with him without him. But it'll be interesting to see if he does play, how him and Hopkins are deployed, because in the wildcard game against the Bills, you know, Hopkins was largely neutralized in the first half when they had him in the slot. And they used him in the slot intermittently over the course of the regular season, and he has been more effective at points. But then in the second half, they moved him outside and just, they were trying to avoid Tre'Davious White. They put him on Tre'Davious White and he cooked him. I kind of think that has more to do with Deshaun Watson though than DeAndre Hopkins and his sort of inconsistency. So I'm not sure like schematically it makes that big of a difference. But on the Chiefs side of things, I mean, so when Thornhill went out, they had Amrani Watts, who's the backup safety, and then Kendall Fuller, the cornerback who you might remember from the Alex Smith trade, came in and replaced him for a bit. And I just think that this defense, this secondary, again, which you wrote about, it's pretty complicated. Like, it's not the kind of pass defense where you can just slot a guy in, so to speak. And also, Thornhill's been so good that it's allowed Spagnuolo to use Tyrann Mathieu, the other safety, in a lot of interesting ways. They've blitzed him. They use complex coverages. And I just wonder if that'll all go out the window without him.
Yeah, that's my big worry. I don't know how they're going to adjust because this really hasn't been Spagnuolo's MO. He doesn't even really have an MO. I think we've talked about this before. I didn't even know what his defensive scheme was before he got hired by the Chiefs. I kind of had to look up his past when I was writing that article. And he has, like, a lot of different versions of this defense that he's had, so I don't know what to expect. Maybe he just goes back to a more conservative, maybe more simple one-high defense. Maybe it looks like something that Seattle might play. I have no idea.
It's a rude, unnecessary shot. But I think
I'm sorry for insulting your elite defense from a decade ago.
We'll talk about that. Yeah, you know what? You can do that if you have Earl Thomas and Cam Hassler. I think if there's a reason for Chiefs fans to not worry, it's the fact that the pass rush has really come on as the season has gone on, right? At the beginning of the year, there was a lot of skepticism about the Frank Clark trade because he was not good. Chris Jones has been a beast all year. And then I think people realize, oh, right, he was just hurt and sick or something because he's been very, very good as the year has gone by. And I think, and then they also added Terrell Suggs, who still has those old man smarts that I think is useful for pass pressure, for stunts and the like. And I think that's obviously concerning, you know, against a Texans offensive line that I don't know what to compare them to. Like wet paper towels, maybe? I mean, I know that the cool thing is to blame it all on Deshaun Watson, but they're not good.
Right, they're not good. I think he makes it harder for them, but they're not good on their own. Like, if you put Tom Brady back there, they still wouldn't be good.
So how do you think Watson deals with it? I mean, again, Watson is a big part of the reason why this Texans team is so hard to predict.
I think he'll have a good game. Whether Fuller plays or not, I think they're going to be able to avoid Hopkins, like, dealing with Tyrann Mathieu if they have to. I think they did do a good job of at least trying to make him avoid Tre'Davious White, and then they realized, like, this is actually a matchup we can exploit. This was a matchup we exploited last year. But I don't think they're going to run him into where they expect Tyrann Mathieu to be. They'll keep him on the outside. And I do think that I know the Chiefs' pass rush has been coming on, but I don't know if they have rushers that are capable of containing Deshaun Watson in the pocket. Not that most teams have that, but you have those old – you have Terrell Suggs on the outside. You have Frank Clark, who's not really – he doesn't have, like, elite bend. He's not a terribly athletic guy. He's more of a power rusher. So I think Watson can get outside of the pocket and make plays.
Watson took 3.65 seconds to throw on average against the Bills. I mean, some of that was, distorted by a few crazy scrambles, but that is, I mean, the magic scramble at the end, I think it took approximately 45 minutes. I didn't time it, but that's an approximation. By the way, I do think his running ability could be massive in this game, right? Because, and that's something he really finally unleashed in the last game. He ran 14 times. There was that insane, the touchdown run, which I believe was a design. No, the run before that was a design run, and then he ran it in. And if there's one thing we do know, despite the Chiefs' improvements in the pass defense, despite the fact that they still have a very good pass rush, they cannot stop the run, whether it's a running back or a quarterback.
And I think it's even worse, like, for an option quarterback. Like, if they use him in the option game, which I think they did more, like, in the middle of the season. I don't know how much they're doing it anymore. But he was really a big part of that rushing game when it was really effective. So I think they might bust it out again just to keep Mahomes off the field. And I wouldn't be surprised if he has a big game and Carlos Hyde has a big game, that rushing game as a whole has a big game.
And Duke Johnson, please use Duke Johnson. I don't.
Oh, my God. He averaged like 10 yards per touch last game. And they gave him 6 touches.
He saved them.
And they couldn't move the ball.
That third and long, he saved the team. Duke Johnson. Right. Like, he exists. Well, look, on the other side of the ball, Texas defense is not good. So I don't – give me a reason to feel some hope that they can contain Patrick Mahomes.
Based on the defense, I don't think I can give you any hope. I don't know what you want me to say. Deshaun Watson's on the other side. Maybe J.J. Watt just has a monster day, but even that, I'm skeptical. I know he got a sack, and he was getting after Josh Allen a couple times, but missed some sacks by just an inch or two. But I don't know about getting to Patrick Mahomes and rattling him.
Yeah, I mean, I was, like, I will say this. I was impressed by the Texans secondary relative to my expectations. Like, Garian Conley was really good, right? Who they got with the Clowney pick, I believe. Bradley Roby had, he dropped a couple picks, but he was still very good. That was against Josh Allen. This is Patrick Mahomes. So I don't know. I agree with you that Deshaun Watson is really their best hope in this game. And then again, from like a coaching standpoint, Chiefs would seem to have the edge. So I guess, do you think this is going, let me wrap it up. Do you think this is a blowout potential, or do you think that could be limited by Deshaun Watson going off?
I mean, I think it can be limited by that, but I'm picking a blowout. I think they win, but they win comfortably. I don't know if it's by 2 touchdowns, but I think in the fourth quarter, they're up by at least 10 points.
Yeah, I think it'll be, I'm very interested in, and that's why kind of we spent so much time about it, talking about the Houston Texans offense versus the Chiefs defense, just because I think we'll learn a lot more from that, you know, in terms of assuming they advance, and maybe they won't, sort of what they'll look like against the Ravens in the AFC championship the football gods want us to have. I think I want to see how they play without Thornhill. I mean, their DB is, like, Tre'Davious White has actually been low-key pretty good this year. I guess, and sometimes their linebackers, they're not good at run defense, but they get at it too in the pass rush. So I think there's a lot to be learned on that side of the ball, and also it's of the utmost importance that they don't suffer injuries. Let's go to Vikings and Niners next. So how do I put this? Everyone's very high on the Vikings right now. Is everyone wrong?
That's hard to answer. I'm going to say no, but I think this is a terrible
matchup. I set up a major straw man for you. Feel free to knock it down.
Right, right. This is a terrible matchup for them, in my opinion. I do not
like... On both sides of the ball? Or?
Yeah, on both sides of the ball, actually. I do not trust Mike Zimmer against Kyle Shanahan. I know Mike Zimmer is great. Mm-hmm. He's one of the best defensive coaches in the league, but I can't get that game, that Thursday night game from last year against the Rams out of my head, where McVay just got any matchup he wanted on Anthony Barr. And I don't know if you've seen that interview Adam Lefkoe had with Austin Hooper when he was talking about Kyle Shanahan, how he just like game plans off of one player in particular. And he's just like, yo, we're going to make this guy's life a living hell this week. I think that's Anthony Barr this week. And I'm just can't wait to see what happens.
You had that tweet about how somewhere Anthony Barr is like at dinner, completely oblivious to the fact that Shanahan's going to murder him.
Right.
So bad.
People tagged Anthony Barr in that tweet too. I'm like, why did you send that?
Okay.
Let him enjoy dinner.
PSA. Yeah. PSA, stop doing that. If you listen to this podcast, do not do that. Do not tag players in negative tweets. It is honestly one of the 10 corniest things you can do on Twitter, but let's put a pin on that. So if the Texans' hope, I think, of winning is Deshaun Watson turning into Superman again for all four quarters instead of just one, or two, actually, I think the Vikings' hope is that their defense carries them in this. A defense that was spectacular. I mean, we give Mike Zimmer grief for some of the, I think, limitations he puts on the offense and occasionally some of the situational stuff. Although he's had, like, pretty good offenses under him. But, you know, handcuffing Kirk Cousins and focusing so much on the run game early on and this and that. But he put on, like, a defensive masterpiece against New Orleans in some ways, right? I mean, in many ways, the Vikings, they do have very good personnel. I think they have personnel that was pretty well suited to stop New Orleans, given that the strength of the team is the front seven and the linebackers. But what they did to Mike Thomas was really impressive, the way they used safeties and linebackers to cover him. And I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility that they can come up with a different sort of game plan against the San Francisco offense that they have a lot of in-house familiarity with, given that they sort of run a weird version of it.
Right. But I do think like you said, the Saints offense is kind of like in their wheelhouse just because the strength of that defense is up the spine. Like even the safeties are great. And Michael Thomas, as good as he is, he's not an outside receiver. He's not like an outside threat downfield. And if you're going to attack the Vikings, you probably want to attack Xavier Rhodes, who is basically Brandon Browner now. I just don't see it against a Kyle Shanahan offense because they play a lot of two high safeties. And against Shanahan, I think that just opens up the run game. And then that opens up all their other looks off that run game. And you saw it last year when they played in week one. Like, George Kittle was getting wide open. I think Kyle Juszczyk got wide open a couple times. There was a drop. I think Jimmy G overthrew one guy. But there was opportunities there. The Vikings defense has changed since then, but I still trust Kyle Shanahan more than I trust Mike Zimmer, which is crazy to say because I love Mike Zimmer.
I think the Vikings pass rush, actually, they were good last year too, so I'm not going to say that they changed. Did they actually? They didn't have, I think, Everson Griffin in the beginning of last year, right? That was when he was out.
No, he played the first week. The first week, their pass rush was crazy because Sheldon Richardson just went nuts. So their pass rush was crazy for that game.
I mean, it's funny, in the Saints game, like, they only pressured them, I think, I wrote it down somewhere, 27%, which normally isn't great, but against the Saints is, like, ridiculous because Drew Brees was the least pressured quarterback in the NFL this season. And the Saints' offensive line is very good, and Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter made them look not very good. You know, on one hand, I think Jimmy Garoppolo is a significantly worse quarterback under pressure. On the other hand, he gets rid of the ball very, very quickly. So, and Kyle Shanahan is very, very good at coming up with ways to neutralize that. He's very good at coming up with ways to exploit, as you said, the specific kind of coverages the Vikings run. They use a lot of quarters, which is kind of a nightmare against Kyle. But they actually are really good against tight ends in particular. And again, that's because Eric Kendricks is one of, if not the best, coverage linebackers in the NFL this year. And You know, Anthony Barr, I think against tight ends, he helps a lot. But the problem is, I think your numbers against tight ends don't really matter against San Francisco, if that makes sense. Because it's like the way they use it, it's less about just him being a tight end and more about the specific ways in which they use him and the ways in which they trick you.
Also, who is the best tight end in the NFC North? Not on the Vikings.
Okay, so you got Hawkins Smith, Jimmy Graham, and who's the Bears tight end? I know this. He was like kind of hyped for a second, and then people were like,
Trey Burton, I think.
Trey Burton, yeah. They could really use a tight end, but that's a subject for another day. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's automatic that the Niners are going to carve them up. However,
no, I agree.
I am concerned about Kirk Cousins against this Niners defense that is getting healthy at the right time. They could bring back Quan Alexander, Dee Ford, and Jaquiski Tartt in this game.
And I think they have a lot of experience against this type of offense. Like, you know, Shanahan obviously is related to the Kubiak scheme. McVay comes from the Shanahan scheme. And then even the Seahawks do a lot of this bootleg action. They do it as much as, I think, any non-McVay Shanahan team in the league. So they've seen these route concepts before. I think they're at least prepared for them, and they have adjusted to them. Like, the Rams, I think, were having a lot of success with them in one half of a game, and then they adjusted in the second half. So I think they're ready for them. And then Kirk Cousins is the kind of quarterback you kind of want to face when you have this defense, which is give up stuff underneath and then rally to the ball. I know he's been pushing the ball downfield more often this year, but when you have your
safeties, been really good. Hey, I want to defend Kirk Cousins' honor, even though the second I tweeted something positive about him was right before that Packers game, and then it was like a obvious. The second I tweeted, I knew that he was going to be terrible. He has been a very good deep passer this year. Statistically, I think he's like top three, so continue.
I think just during his Vikings career so far, like that first year, he threw a lot of balls I didn't think he was capable of throwing. Like, against the Rams on that Thursday night, he was just throwing dimes, like, all night long. So I do think he deserves credit for being a great deep passer, but he still does kind of have that tendency to give up on a play maybe a little too early.
Mm. Was that the game where he, like, started to run for the first down and then turned around? Or I'm trying to remember. No, that was Mitch Trubisky. Oh, no.
that was Trubisky against the Bears. Not against the Bears on Thanksgiving.
It's funny you mentioned the Rams game and how the Rams were killing them by booting, right? And then in the second half, they were able to contain. But by containing, the Rams, I think if they had a better offensive line, could have been able to run up the gut a little bit, which Minnesota can do. Minnesota, I feel like I'm defending. I'm like trying. You're forcing me into like the unpopular opinion take on
right,
the
I sense
podcast
that. Like,
because I think the Niners are going to win. I picked the Niners, but I want to make the case here. The other thing, by the way, the Niners have their defense has been vulnerable to outside runs. Another thing that, of course, Dalvin Cook is very good at. So they do have some, I think, matchups that could favor them. And then we talk about these guys coming back. We don't know if they're healthy, right? Like, we don't know what Quan Alexander in particular, I think, is going to look like. I think the loss of him and Ford, I mean, Ford in particular, when him and Nick Bosa were playing, they had 24 sacks. Since then, and he's been gone for a very long time, they had 24 sacks. So it's part of the reason why sort of Nick Bosa at times flagged a bit down the end. I think losing Dee Ford was a much bigger loss than anyone could have anticipated. But I'm not optimistic about this Vikings offensive line because while they were great in the Saints game and Kirk Cousins came up big in uncharacteristically big moments, Riley Reiff was just getting obliterated by Cam Jordan, and you know it's not going to get better this weekend.
Yeah, I think the 49ers are going to win and easily, but I could easily see the Vikings giving them a game. Just because I trust Mike Zimmer enough to put something together, and maybe Jimmy G has a bad game. You never know with Jimmy G. He either looks like one of the best quarterbacks in the league, or maybe he looks a little below average. So I think that's their path to victory, just bother Jimmy G.
Yeah, I mean, they're both going to use a ton of play action. Like I said, they're basically similar versions of the same offense, the Kubiakian offense. But let me ask you this. Who's got a better defense? Because I kind of think it's Minnesota, top to bottom.
That's a good question.
Like, when you really think about it.
I would go with the Vikings.
Because the guys are coming back. Again, if they were fully healthy, it might be a little bit different.
Right.
But I don't know. So when you think about it from that perspective, I understand, like, Kyle Shanahan versus Mike Zimmer is definitely favors the 49ers, even though I think Mike Zimmer is a brilliant defensive coach. But I don't know. The Vikings defense is, I mean, honestly, who has the best defense left in the playoffs?
I'm going with the Ravens.
Yeah, sorry. I thought I had something there, and I didn't. Okay. Take a few of your questions. Before we do, I want to tell you a bit about Upstart. Between hitting the gym, eating cleaner, or learning a new skill, there's a lot of ways we can better ourselves in the new year. But I can't think of one that's more important than starting the year off by tackling high-interest credit card debt. My friends at Upstart.com are here to help. Upstart is a revolutionary lending platform that offers smarter rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate. Since it's just a soft pull, it will not affect your credit score. The hard pull happens if you accept the rate. The best part? Once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. The next day. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot. And hurry to upstart.com/Mina to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. That's upstart.com/Mina.
Question. Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
As always, guys, thank you for these questions, and thank you for your reviews. First question comes from Pansy10. This looks like a Seahawks question. Steven, some of these questions are a little bit dated, so I have to kind of, like, bring, like, they'll be like, hey, like, you know, how are my Raiders looking? And, you know, they're out. Let me ask you this one. Does Russell need another weapon, and who would you go after? I think it's kind of interesting to think about that from the lens of the playoffs, actually, because of what we saw last week with DK Metcalf, which we're going to get to that game next. Like, what kind of – well, I know what I think. They need a tight end. Obviously, Will Disley was hurt. I mean, who would you add to the Seahawks offense?
I think they still need a replacement for Doug Baldwin. They need, like, a route runner that they can rely on to win from the slot. They have Lockett, who's – I mean, he's a deep threat, and he's a decent enough route runner. And they obviously have DK, who's just a monster on the outside. I still think Russell needs that guy he can rely on third down just to beat the man in front of him. I don't know if they have that guy right now. I don't know who the free agents are available. Is Emmanuel Sanders a free agent? Because I think he'd be the ideal guy.
Oh, interesting. I think he might be, and they haven't extended him. They drafted Gary Jennings Jr., but they cut him, which was interesting because he was drafted in like the fourth round. Snore 10579 asks, does Jimmy G, it's a little bit dated. He wants to know if he's the new Flacco, where people are arguing he's elite because of his win-loss record. Does he get a pass due to how handsome he is? Well, I'm sure he benefits in that sort of 30 Rockian way from how handsome he is, but let me put it this way. Do you think Jimmy G has proved his mettle this season?
I don't even know what that means. Like, I know what you're asking, but I don't know how a quarterback...
What tier would you put him in?
I'd say three. I'd say he's probably around average. Like, I'd put him in... I think he's better than Jared Goff, but I'd put him in that same tier. He's high. He's at the top of it, while Goff is probably at the bottom of it.
Yeah.
Like, I trust him. I don't think he's great when his first read's not open. I don't think he's good at, like, reading out plays. Like, if he has to make a throw and you present him with a makeable throw, he's going to make it. He has a talented arm. He's a good thrower of the football. I'm just worried what happens when the play breaks down, or not even breaks down, it just doesn't work as designed. Like, the first read isn't open.
I think that's fair. I've been surprised by how crisp he is on some of the intermediate stuff. I mean, I think just his touch, anticipation, like, he can make all the throws, but I think you're right. It's mostly just mental stuff for me at this point. But, yeah, I mean, he certainly played well. All right. Next question. This is a name I don't want to read. It's J-O-L, Kitty, Kitty, and then some things I don't want to say. But they are asking, what changes would you like to see for contracts in the next CBA? I'd be interested in seeing 3 years instead of four for rookies, the removal of the franchise tag, giving rookies a fourth-year option that would work kind of like the franchise tag where you have one to use on your first-round pick and one to use on a later pick, but you have to pay them the average of top salaries. Ooh, this is the whole thing. We'll talk about this during the offseason. I have a lot of thoughts on it. But I guess, by and large, obviously, the thing about salary cap discussion, again, this is like a whole separate thing, is like we talk about how bad the tag is and how bad rookie contracts are, but the NFL is a hard cap league. Like, that money goes somewhere else, right? So when you criticize sort of the tag or when you criticize rookie contracts, you're really trying to just make a merit-based argument because it's not like it results in less money. It's just money that goes somewhere else.
Right. And I don't mind the tag, at least for the first year. I think they should make it harder to tag someone for a second year. I do think that. I think the tag was designed to help teams negotiate long-term contracts, not to keep a player hostage, which it has been used as in the past. So I would like to see that change. I don't have a problem with the tag, the concept of the tag. My suggestion, or my crazy idea, would be a franchise quarterback tag. And this would allow teams to, like, keep those quarterback salaries off the salary cap. Like, you can designate a franchise quarterback, but you have to pay them a certain amount of guaranteed money, like most of the contracts guaranteed. And it's, like, kind of based on the NBA's max contract structure, where, like, accolades, right, like, make you a super max quarterback where you're making, like, $200 million. Or if you're, like, a guy like Derek Carr, you're making, like, $100 million, and then now the Raiders have more cap space to build around them.
Yeah, I think it would just make the quarterback decision all the more consequential. Last question. Perpetual Bake Sale says, I am a Marcus Mariota defender. Or if I am a Marcus Mariota defender, what do you think the next landing spot is for him? I don't think he's a starter next year, Steven. But I don't hate the idea of bringing him in to compete somewhere like Chicago.
Right. Chicago is like the obvious answer. I think everyone would say Chicago. And
Oregon,
I can't think of a better answer. And that's a job he could potentially win. I mean, as much as I've given up on Mariota, I think he's better than Mitch Trubisky.
How badly do you think Mariota's been hurt reputationally by what Ryan Tannehill's done in Tennessee?
Oh, big time. Like, yeah, we always do this thing. It's the same thing with Adam Gase and Ryan Tannehill. I feel like Tannehill and our
Gase. He's Jeff Fishering people. It's like how Goff Jeff right. Fishered. Yeah.
You think Gase and Mariota just hate Tannehill, right? Like, they call each other and just hate on him?
I mean, do you think Jeff Fisher hates Jared Goff for getting better after he left?
I don't know. I think Jeff Fisher is at peace with his NFL career.
You remember that picture?
He's like out hunting every day.
That picture that circulated of Jared Goff and Nick Foles, like, hugging and, like, people captioned it, he can't hurt you anymore.
Yeah, that was great.
It's brutal. All right. Let's talk Seahawks-Packers. I think this is going to be the closest game. It sounds like you agree.
Yes.
Partially because these teams are kind of not great, right? They're not great in different ways. I think the Seahawks are a mediocre to bad team with an elite quarterback. The Packers...
Uh-oh. What are you about to say about Aaron Rodgers?
Well, I'm not going to say what you think I'm about to say. So the Packers are a better football team. I'll say that. On, like, a talent top-to-bottom perspective. But they've gotten really lucky in ways that make me think of these teams as closer together. One, They've played the Seahawks played, I think, the second hardest schedule in the NFL, and all the NFC West teams got, you know, just totally brutalized this year. So the Packers played a very, very easy schedule this season. So I think that's noteworthy. They've played some pretty bad offenses. They've gotten a lot, both teams actually have gotten a ton of turnovers. And then the other thing is they've had a very few injuries, again, relative to the Seahawks, who I think, according to Man Games Lost, have the most in the league. So I think the Packers have benefited from certain things, which makes these teams sort of closer together in like their actual goodness to me.
Right. And have you ever felt good about the Packers at any point this season? Like maybe after that Vikings
win? The beginning.
Win, but
yeah. The beginning like of the year. Then, when the Vikings win. I felt good at the beginning of the year. I was like, yeah, this defense is good. I was pumping them up all offseason. So I felt good about them then.
Right. And I'm really excited to see what the Seahawks offense looks like in this game. Just because I think the Seahawks are like, they're like one of those people that like gets in a relationship and just like becomes their significant other. Like they just adopt like all of their habits. Like the Seahawks do that with whatever team they're playing. They're just going to like just become them. And the Packers are really interesting on defense, just how they play, just because they play so much dime.
Yeah. They're not good. I mean, let me rephrase that. Their pass defense is better than their run defense first, which concerns me that Seattle will see that. But on top of that, not only is their run defense, they're, let's see, 23rd in efficiency, they've also played bad run teams. So, which again, that's accounted for in DVOA, I realize that, but I think they might even be worse than we think. I think their secondary, they're pretty good in like the intermediate areas outside the numbers. They're really bad against deep passes. On 20-yard plus passes, they're allowing opposing quarterbacks to complete over 43% of their passes, which is like almost the worst in the NFL. Which, as you know, is a thing that Russell Wilson is very good at, and we saw that in the last round. They're not great against tight ends, not that Seattle has strength in that area, but they are good at rushing the passer, and I am very terrified of Za'Darius Smith in this game.
I would also, if I was a Packers fan, I'd be terrified of Kevin King having guard DK Metcalf. Like, that's the matchup the Seahawks have to attack.
You studied the Packers' secondary. How do you think they're going to approach DK? Because we saw what happens when you play man against DK Metcalf. How do you think they're going to approach this game with him in Lockett?
Well, the Packers have been playing zone a lot this year, so I don't think you're going to get one-on-one matchups. But the way they play zone, I think he will get isolated at times. They're not going to have like safety help over there. They're more likely to have a safety in the middle of the field or just guarding the seam. So I think they'll find some success out there if they do match DK Metcalf with Kevin King. I think that this is the Packers, their approach to defense is the perfect approach for playing the Seahawks because they're going to play dime. They're going to have two safeties deep for the most part. They're going to have these looks in the box where you're like, we can run on this. And the Seahawks, I think, are going to fall into that trap. And we're going to have one of those games where we're all like, let Russ cook. And they might let him cook, but it might be too late.
Yeah, right. In the fourth quarter, he's gonna go. I will say I was somewhat heartened by the last game. The Seahawks offense you didn't learn anything about the Seahawks defense against Josh McCown, but the Seahawks offense against the Eagles defense, which was not bad, especially up front, compared to the wild card game last year, at least. It felt like they had learned. They still did, like ran inside straight at Fletcher Cox like a few too many times, which turns out Fletcher Cox against Joey Hunt, not a great matchup. But for the most part, it felt like for one they called some pretty clever plays. There were like passes to running backs in situation. I think I remember it was like a third and short at one point in the second half. They had a play action pass to Lynch after. Making it look like he was going to run the ball that I thought was quite clever. So I think I hear what you're saying, and I, again, am a Seahawks fan, so you're probably right. I've seen that movie before. But they did some pretty smart things in the last game. I don't know. I think the Seahawks have some matchup advantages on offense. Now, on defense, I don't think that's the case. I also don't think that the Packers quarterback has been playing well. I want to ask you something, though. He's not playing well. How are they 10th in passing DVOA? Explain to me that. With pretty bad receivers after Devontae Adams.
I have no idea, because it does not look like the 10th best passing defense. I don't, like, is
offense,
Matt LaFleur, like, rigging the DVOA numbers? Does he work at Football Outsiders? That's my only explanation. Like, it's never looked that good. It's never looked like a top 10 pass offense. Maybe against the Raiders, but other than that, I just don't see it. I do think this is a good matchup for the Packers offense, though, because the Seahawks don't have a pass rush outside of Clowney. And
no,
the Packers, according to the numbers, have the best pass blocking offensive line in the league.
Do you not believe that? You said that in like a skeptical sounding way.
No, I believe it. I don't think you can just rely on shoulder pad chips to decide how good teams are blocking, but like it passes the eye test, I do believe. Like it looks good on film and the chips say they're doing good. So yeah, I do think they have a good pass.
Rodgers blocking was so bad in the Lions game, man.
Awful.
I mean, some of those throws. He also has been doing the thing where, like, he falls as he's throwing, even though there's no one near him. I don't understand what's happening. It's like a phantom wind or something. It's very odd. You know what I mean? He's kind of, like, falling away.
Yeah, it's kind of like what Brady got. I think Brady started doing that this year. I don't know if it's
an old person thing.
Yes.
Yes.
Eli Manning did the most extreme.
I totally think that's it.
Eli Manning was the most extreme example of this. Like Eli would just—he would get sacked on it. He wouldn't even throw the ball.
I know. Oh, I'm gonna miss his self sacks the most, because they're just—that's the most relatable football content you'll ever see. Is an Eli Manning self sack. I mean, who among us has not self sacked in life? But yeah, Aaron Jones is very good. I think breaks a lot of tackles. I think the return of Quandre Diggs made a. Mad. The CSHs are actually pretty good. McDougal and Diggs, I think, they played really well last week. So I think that should help in that regard as well. It is a matchup that favors them just because the secondary is so deeply flawed. But, you know, you'd have to count on Rodgers to be more consistent than he's been.
Right. And I don't know, when's the last time he was consistent for more than like two games in a row? It's been a while. I do think LaFleur could scheme up some stuff if the Seahawks decide to stay in base like they've been doing. Like, I don't know if they're doing it as much as they were in the first half of the season, but that's a concern to me just because of how the Packers run their offense. It's kind of meant to attack linebackers at times, so that could be an issue.
Getting Diggs back helps greatly in that regard.
Right.
And they finally play, you know, they've got the rookie Ugo Amadi, who's been pretty good out of, I think, Oregon. Feels like they're finally letting him play a little bit, and so that's helpful. It's funny. I mean, the Seahawks pressure, they've been abysmal all season aside from a few crazy, like the Jadeveon Clowney Niners game, but I saw some people pointing out, well, they had 30% pressure rate against the Eagles. It's like, yeah, Josh McCown was literally moving like Lenny after he was drugged, and at the time, I mean, it was just not, you know, you don't think that. You know what? I say that. I'm going to take that back because Josh McCown had that, like, dip. Do you remember that? Where he kind of, like, ducked under and sprinted out.
Yeah.
He also, like, had to. So, you know what? Strike that. I'm wrong. But I'm not really impressed by it. The Eagles' offensive line was, like, you know, half backups and such. So, Packers' offensive line is a very different animal. All that said, I think we're both. It sounds like this one could go either way.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards the Packers just because they're playing at home. If this was in Seattle, I'd probably pick the Seahawks. And Russell Wilson's a better quarterback in this game.
Obviously.
So they have a chance. I mean, I think they have a pretty good chance. Better than a chance.
So, let's talk about the last game, which you said was the game you're looking forward to the most. So now I get to take the favorite kind of role here, just be the sort of obvious person. I think the Ravens are going to smush him. As I did the prep for this game, because I kind of talked myself into the Titans, and I was like, yeah, they're kind of have like the Ravens identity, and Tannehill's been great, and they've got some really talented guys. But as I went through the matchups, and I thought about like the Jayon Brown injury, which I don't think he's playing, but I'll check that. He's like out for the season, right? Anyways, I don't see it happening.
Okay, let me at least
yes
put out why I do think the Titans will struggle, because I was concerned with their run fits against the Patriots. I know overall they played well against the run, but when the Patriots did like some misdirection stuff, when they did motion and the jet sweep stuff, they had a lot of success. Like that Julian Edelman touchdown, I don't know if you've seen it, but like Adoree Jackson didn't know who had the ball after Julian Edelman gave the ball to the ref.
It was really bad. Yes.
That's my one concern for the Titans. If that goes wrong, then I think they will get blown out. But now I'll make the case for the Titans at least being competitive.
Okay. On offense or defense?
Both. I think they could be competitive on both. I don't think the offense is as bad as it looked last week. I think we're going to see...
It was really good on defense.
Well, the running game was really good. The passing game... And then the running game actually wasn't good in the second half. I don't know if people are saying this, but I looked up the EPA numbers. Right. Like in the second half, they were negative. Like Derrick Henry had five successful runs out of 20 in the second half because the Patriots went to that Super Bowl front, and that basically shut everything down. And they could never get to the play action passing game, really.
So it was interesting, Steve. In the first half, the Patriots were basically letting them run schematically, right? I mean, you know, the whole Patriots, Bill Belichick takes away your best thing, right? That wasn't the run. They were like, we're going to take away the play action pass. We're going to take away Tannehill. And it worked. And then they kind of were like, ah, you know what? He's not going to beat us regardless. Which proved to be true. So then, as you pointed out, they ran the Super Bowl front and, it was successful. It is interesting to me that like in a game where Derrick Henry goes off and what is like 160 yards, something insane, 182 yards, Jesus. They only put up 14 points, which is obviously an indictment against a run-first offense conceptually. But I don't really think that's fair because I think, yes, it's an indictment against a run-only offense. But when Ryan Tannehill is executing, it's a great thing to have in your toolbox. The problem is it's just not enough on its own, and I don't think it'll be enough on its own in this game.
Also, it was by design. Like, Belichick let it happen. Like, he knew what he was doing. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, we can't stop the run and we don't know what to do about it. It was... yeah, we're going to keep letting them run, but we're going to play bend but don't break, and they're going to eventually break, and they did, because, one, they're playing the Patriots' defense in Foxborough on a rainy night.
Yeah. So the Ravens' defense, I don't think they're as good as the Patriots' defense, even though after the Marcus Peters trade, it's possible that the numbers look better. They're obviously very, very, very aggressive. And they were aggressive before. They were aggressive after. ESPN Stats and Info had this crazy stat during, it was right after the game, where they talked about, you know, they blitzed just as much before and after. But from weeks 1 through 6, when they blitzed, opposing quarterbacks averaged 6.5 yards per dropback after the Peters trade. So weeks 7 through 17, 3.3 yards per dropback. When they went man zero, weeks 1 through 6, this is the Ravens defense, opposing quarterbacks completed 71% of their passes. Weeks 7 through 17, 32% of their passes. So the blitz has been absolutely deadly. I will say, though, Ryan Tannehill has been very, very good at the blitz. I think there's sort of like this misconception that quarterbacks who hold on to the ball like him too long, it's like, oh, he's got to be bad against blitz. But actually, when he's got like a plan to get it out and get out quickly and he's throwing as well as he has, it can help him, I think. So I actually think that could, I don't want to say it'd be an advantage for the Titans, but it's something that Tannehill has actually been quite good at.
And I think it's kind of counterintuitive, but play action, it like actually helps quarterbacks avoid sacks. Like sack rates go down when you do play action because it slows down the pass rush. Totally. And that's kind of the reason why I think the Titans might have a chance. Like, if they were run by a defensive coordinator that might borrow what the Patriots did last week and use that Super Bowl front and use the same coverages that they used to take away the play action, then I would be a little more pessimistic. I'd be like, oh, they're just going to do the same thing, and they have a lot of talent so they can execute this scheme, and the Titans might not have an answer. But I don't think Wink Martindale is going to do that. I think he's going to continue to play his defense. And I don't know if it's going to necessarily work against what the Titans are doing on offense. And the Ravens' run defense isn't that good. The pass defense is great. I don't know if the run defense is that good. I think maybe Derrick Henry can have some success. And Marcus Peters, as good as he is prone to freelance. And I think that could be a problem against a play-action offense, And then one more thing, these Titans receivers are so good at catching, winning 50-50 balls downfield. So if they're playing a ton of cover zero, they're going to have those opportunities.
Yeah, who do you put on A.J. Brown in this game? How do you handle him? Not that he was such a factor in the last one, but...
Well, I think the Ravens play like their corners to like the same sides either way, so the Titans are going to be able to dictate that matchup. They're going to get whoever they want on A.J. Brown.
Right. I think you'd want to get him away from Marlon Humphrey, who's probably their most, their strongest, most physical cornerback. Peters is like, he hasn't, in that whole time frame with, like, you know, I gave those man zero numbers, he has not had, like, a Marcus Peters mistake, right? I can't even
no,
think
he
of like a total bust. You'd think he'd be due, I guess. I like their tight ends too. I like Jonnu Smith, man. I like a lot of their weapons. The question I think is kind of whether the 74 or 76 yard performance from Tannehill was like an aberration, right? Because forget the Marcus Peters game. Everyone's been waiting for the Ryan Tannehill regression game. It's probably the truth is somewhere in between. I think he's better than that. He's probably not as good as he's been, right? And this is a very good defense. On the other side of the football, this is the Dean Pease revenge game, which could work, I think, in Tennessee's favor, given his familiarity with that. I mean, they run it. That's his defense that Martindale took over.
Yeah, and I wrote about this on Tuesday. Lamar hasn't struggled against anyone, really, but he did kind of struggle against the Chiefs, and what the Chiefs did in that game was disguise coverages and do a lot of coverage rotations. And I don't know if you've watched the Titans' defense, but that's, like, all they do. They're just crazy. Like, Pease is running like the craziest offense. It's so fun to watch on tape.
Yeah.
They'll start out in cover two and then like rotate and then somehow still end up in cover two again. But they're sending like a rush, like the slot cornerback, and then dropping a defensive end. So they're getting like blitz action while still dropping seven. And I think that can confuse Lamar. So if their run defense is just decent and it's top 10 in like EPA and I think success rate and DVOA, if they can just put Lamar in obvious passing situations more often than not, I think they can at least slow down the Ravens' offense. I don't think there's any stopping the Ravens' offense, but maybe they hold them under 30 points and Tannehill goes off and they keep it competitive. That's the only reason I think the Titans have a chance.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to beat him just by, like, God, if the Seahawks play him again. Anyways, you're not going to beat him just by, like, playing your defense and, like, winning, you know, your matchups and, like, with athleticism or anything like that.
Right. And have you seen his numbers against cover zero?
Scrape exchange every time. What'd you say?
Have you seen his numbers against cover zero? They are phenomenal. Like, he's the best in EPA by a wide margin, and his success rate is, like, 60, something crazy, like 65%. Like, you do not flip Lamar Jackson.
Titans have pretty good D-line. You know, God, this isn't the D-line, but it's funny. Everyone's talking about Derrick Henry. How about Rashawn Evans, the other Bama?
Right.
Product
and Jeffrey Simmons was just blowing up the Patriots interior line.
Yeah, between Casey, Simmons, Evans, and then up the middle, Kevin Byard and Kenny Vicar. Like, the spine of this defense is pretty strong and pretty solid. Which again, I think if you're picking your poison against Lamar, that's where you want to be strong. I think you're better
off. Force him to throw outside the numbers. That was his weakness in college and the first year. I think he's figured it out in this year, but I would still rather him throw.
You cannot expose those seams. If those seams are open, you are dead. You are dead meat. All right. Speaking of dead meat, let's ask Steven a few questions.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
First question. You're a fan of the Carolina Panthers, who recently hired a head coach, Matt Rhule. What is that thing he wears? Is it like a vest? It reminds me of something I wore in the Girl Scouts.
Someone that I work with called it a tactical smock.
Oh, God. Tactical smock. It looks like something like a kindergarten teacher would wear, like, while the class is painting. You're sort of you've been critical of a lot of the coaching hires. Have you liked any of the coaching hires? Let me forget Matt Rhule. Have you liked any of the coaching hires so far?
I like Rivera to Washington. I was never a fan of Rivera in Carolina, but I think he is a good team builder, and that's definitely what they need. They need
sense,
a professional coach.
Yeah, I feel like everyone liked that one. Okay. Well, I will ask you, How would you grade the Rule hiring right now? By the way, it's stupid to grade coaching hires. We don't know anything, but I'm going to make you do
right.
it.
Right. Like, I'm always terrible at these. Like, I think I had, like, Hugh Jackson as the best coaching hire that offseason,
oh,
and, like,
boy.
Doug Peterson as the worst one. So just fade these picks. But I would give it a – I'm going to give it a C. That's, like, the coward's way out. Like, I should give it an A or
classic
an F. But
I'm
gonna, C. I'm going to give it a C. My concern with Rule is – I don't know if you've seen the quotes that have been going around on Twitter, but he has those.
Quotes.
If we run for this many yards, we usually win. Those type of quotes, which just scare the hell out of me.
If I was evaluated based on things I've said, I think.
Right. That's true.
I don't know. I mean, also, you kind of think, like, Tepper and his stated approach of being analytically inclined has had these conversations with him. But anyways. Well, second question. Let me ask you this. So reportedly, he passed on the Giants, who then went with Joe Judge, whose identity much of America learned today, who is a special teams guy, sort of. They're calling him a wide receivers coach, but really he was a special teams guy in New England. Do you like the special teams? Like, there's a lot of people I respect, like Dominique Foxworth, who have been pounding the table for a special teams hire, a la John Harbaugh. What do you think about that approach?
Oh, yeah, I think that's one of the smarter ways to do it that I don't think teams do it enough. Like, Dave Tube should have gotten a job by now. Like, look at the John Harbaugh thing. I've heard the theories, like, you deal with all types of players and you're like, you know, navigating relationships. It's more like a head coaching job than calling plays, which I think is really overrated when it comes to head coaching hires.
Question number three. Of the remaining teams left, who would be the worst Super Bowl?
Ooh, I'm going to upset someone.
The one you'd be least excited to watch.
I'd say Seahawks-Titans, just because I think...
But you get Russell Wilson. See,
I know.
The Seahawks then.
I mean, you'd rather watch the Seahawks. I don't...
Yeah, but you the should Seahawks... do with Russell Wilson. You know it's going to be a crazy game, right? Think about it.
You're not going to convince me. It's Seahawks-Titans. I'm sorry.
Dang it. All right, that's fine. Whatever. Question... number four. If you had to buy a jersey now in the year 2020 and wear it every day for a month and it can't be a quarterback, what jersey would you wear?
Ooh, this is a tough question too. Josh Allen. You set me
Jags
up for that.
Josh Allen. Jags Josh Allen. We're choosing
no,
the
Bills draft. Josh Allen.
Question, follow-up question. You know what? He looked, he showed some stuff. Follow-up question. I'm so glad I had you on, not when the Bills are already out, by the way, because I don't need you alienating Mina Kime Show listeners or Bills fans. Follow-up question before we get to Lenny's question. Would you rather, okay, now you've got the jersey. Would you rather wear it with jeans, tucked into jeans with a belt, like Peyton Manning style, for this month? Or would you rather have a Fu Manchu for 3 months?
I would tuck it. I feel like that's, like, if you're wearing a jersey anyway, you already look kind of silly. I'm anti-jersey, actually. But
you're not already wearing a jersey anyways. No, this is, you're either doing tucked-in jersey into pants for a month or Fu Manchu for 3 months.
Do I get to wash the clothes?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm taking the jersey. I'm not doing the Fu Manchu.
You're wearing a tucked-in jersey, like, no one will respect you for a month.
Do people with Fu Manchus get respect? Like, who's the last person with a Fu Manchu to get respect? Was it, like, Hulk Hogan in the 90s?
Didn't Aaron Rodgers have a Fu Manchu at one point?
I mean, does he get respect on Twitter these days?
Setting you up there as well. All right. Last question, as always, comes from Lenny. Lenny heard your comments about Fu Manchu, and he wants to know if, based on your avatar, you've looked in the mirror at your own facial hair situation lately.
I have, and I'm wearing a Josh Allen jersey in it.